science.
Hey everyone, welcome to Probably Science. I'm Matt Kirshen.
I'm Jesse Case.
And I am Andy Wood. And fans of the high desert and deep space, we've got some big news for you guys.
If you like those two things, boy, woof.
We're only 2 months out from the first edition of 229 and Beyond. Stand-up, scientists, stargazing in beautiful 29 Palms, California. If you visit 229andbeyond.com, you will see we have announced our first big-name comic who we're very excited to have as both a stand-up performer and a guest on Probably Science. You guys, 229 and Beyond is going to feature Bobcat Goldthwait.
Bobcat.
We got Bobcat Goldthwait.
Oh, shit.
Yep. We got Bob.
I think I've told you about the first time I saw Bobcat live, which was because I knew him growing up from like the Police Academy films and stuff like that, and I knew he was a funny comic, but there's Jesse, you must have done the Throckmorton at one time or another, I'm guessing.
No, I don't know.
You never, it's the Vaudeville Theater that is just outside San Francisco that's been around forever.
No,
I'm very proud of the fact that Charlie Chaplin played there at one time or another.
I haven't done it. I worked with Bob in Seattle.
One of the fun things about it is it used to be up the road from where Dana Carvey, Mort Sahl, and Robin Williams all lived.
Right.
In separate houses, I should point out. There wasn't some, like... funny commune, but they would each pop in. So I was there once, and there was a surprise Robin Williams appearance, and Bobcat was just there as his friend, as his best mate, just there to hang out.
Yep.
And he was and riff on some jokes and stuff with him off stage. I was like, "Are you going on?" He's like, "Nah, I'm just here with my friend." But then Robin Williams went on and was amazing, and was Robin Williams. And then Bobcat, I guess, halfway through Robin's set, changed his mind and decided to go on and. Ridiculous. Like, one of the best sets I've ever seen. Just
when they were filming something in Seattle, Bobcat was directing. And I was with... So, Morgan Murphy of recently seen on ESPN fame. And
has she been... Because she... Is it,
I she was
know,
always... She was at all those finals. Yeah, she was at all those finals.
She's been flying around.
Flying around watching basketball. But and Robin Williams, I was like 22, and they showed up. They all showed up to this show that I was on, and it was still like I still remember hearing Robin Williams laughing at a joke I told.
Oh,
and I can hear, and I was just like, "Fuck,
that's great!"
Like it was like the coolest. It was the coolest feeling.
And it's quite a distinctive laugh as well. It's like, oh, that's Robin Williams
and then
laughing like Robin Williams does.
He went on and improvised the whole thing, and he decided to do a set, and he did the whole thing as this weird character of, like, as a local Seattle prostitute, and just, like, murdered. It was insane. It was insane. But it was definitely one of those things. It was like I was telling you guys last episode about, like, when I first moved to LA, my first week was particularly crazy where I just felt like, oh, I've arrived. You know what I mean? Like I moved into this incredible house and like I went to some, house party at Bamford's house or something. And I was like, oh, this is my life now. Great. And like,
and it always will be.
And it always will be. I'll never be at Liquid Zoo at 3 a.m. Like it was. so it was like the same thing happened when I first got to Seattle. I was just like, I was there like a week and Robin Williams is hanging out and we're talking and I'm like, this is what I do now. And then, a week later, I'm, almost getting stabbed in front of a rehab place or something. I don't know.
So we got distracted. We got off topic. We should introduce our guest because we got off topic talking about the exciting announcement of to 29 and Beyond, which we are very excited about. But
let's introduce the guest, but then I have questions.
Okay. This is, again, someone I've known for a very long time, wanted to get on the show for ages. Super funny comic. Also helps book stuff and run shows at Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank.
Best hair in the game.
Hair in the game. And hilarious. Joshua Snyder, everyone. Hey, Josh, how's it going?
It's good. I was freaking out there because at one point earlier on, I was like, wait, do I jump in yet? They haven't introduced me. How
No,
how
we,
does,
no, we,
and it was
we,
like I was on
us.
A first date. How does it work? How does it work?
That's yeah.
When do I make a move? Where do you're about to just pretend to yawn and work your way into the conversation that way? Just yawn, stretch. So about Robin Williams, it's
yeah. You know, not to immediately. So big news, guys. I'm back on the market. You know.
Oh.
And I have no. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. I mean, it sucks. It's all right. But like, I have no idea how to navigate. That I don't want to do the whole thing, meet somebody again, like get to know someone again at the whole.
Let alone apps, right? I mean,
I'm not doing the apps.
Okay. Well, no, good luck to you that. Then. Yeah.
No, well, you have the exact wrong guest for this issue.
Well, I'm not. I wasn't about to ask for advice.
Oh, good, good. I was. good.
No, I just it's exhausting. Like I thought about. I was like, oh no, like. You get, you know, the older you get, you've had so much weirdness in your life and stuff where you're just like, I don't want to do all this again. Like I want that, you know, like a skip intro button, like on Netflix or something. Like just, I just want to hand someone a pamphlet and say, let's go out in a week if you still feel like it.
I love that.
You know
yes.
what I mean? Like, I don't want to do a first date thing. Like, it's just this, ugh.
It's like when you're about to go to the doctor and they need to do something and they give you the sheet that these are all the things that could go wrong. That's what we need.
And then take that and just ChatGPT summarize.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, you're saying there should be a, there should be just like a little, small print or quickly spoken disclaimer.
Well, no, every time I go out with anyone, they have to sign several waivers.
This potential partner contains anxiety.
right.
Tree nuts, yeah.
Yeah. I'll see your doctor if you experience high blood pressure after dating this person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm just not looking forward to any of that.
I'm
you know
sorry,
what I mean?
Jesse.
It's okay. I'm just like, I don't want to get to know anyone. Never mind romantically. I don't want to know anyone new anyway. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want any new friends.
Or I think about Ron Funch's bit about that, yeah, when he screams at his wife, I don't want any new friends, when she's trying to get her to go out to a party.
I don't want any of that. So I don't know. Whatever.
I forgot. Did we introduce our guest or not?
Yeah.
Oh, we did. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
This is exactly like every first date I've ever been on.
Yeah, and then we'll do it again. Guys, that reminds
me. Halfway through the date, you're just across each other from the table, and she's like, sorry, who are you?
Did we... I just had it in
have
my head
met?
That I thought we hadn't said your name. Oh, of course, all the Joshua Tree stuff. I'm like, did we not
Josh,
say his name?
Josh Snyder.
Yes.
I did say it about 3 minutes ago.
Okay.
And real quick, before we get into peppering Josh with rhetorical questions, Andy, you said this is the first 29 Palms thing. What are you planning? Are there more? Are there going to be more? What's happening?
I mean, if people come out to this, I don't see any reason we couldn't do this again. It's such a It sort of reminds me of the early days of Bridgetown, where it's like, sure. Well, this is already an interesting place that people like to visit, independent of whether there's an event. And if we put on an event here, I don't know. Yeah, I hope it becomes that. Like the venue we're using is one that's opening up. Actually, they have a soft open this weekend. But it's a great beer garden-y restaurant, cafe, adjacent to two hotels. Tons of outdoor space. It's like everything can be in one place. So
yeah.
So and again, we have out, can, all that info. You can watch the shows. You can stay in the hotel. You can date Jesse.
No, you can't. No, you can't. No, you can't.
That'll be one of the prizes. We're gonna have a raffle, and one of the prizes will be Jesse.
No, you have to melt his heart first.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah, I'm not. I don't have the energy right now for any of that. Nah, not doing that. I'm taking a knee for a minute. I'm just saying, because the thought is overwhelming.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to. Come on.
Can I ask how long the relationship was that you just...
3 years?
Oh,
three
wow.
and a half?
Oh.
You know?
I didn't realize it was that long. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's enough to be like, I don't want to do that again for a minute. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh, 2 weeks, that didn't work.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Where then you're like doing karaoke the next day. It's like, It's like the kind where you're like, I got to go back to school, you know? I don't know. Josh, when was your last first date? You brought it up. This is on you.
I mean, I guess technically, if we're talking about I think Obama was still in office. First term.
First term. It was with Mitt Romney. It was weird. It's why Mitt Romney ran. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. With as I recall, there was still an economy at the time. I think. When was it? I think it was right after college. I think. Yeah, that's right. Wow. It's sad life, people. Sad. I feel like I brought the energy down. I'd like to apologize.
Not at all.
No. And the economy and all this relates to a quick science thing. So this was always inevitable for me, but I'm having a go at building a guitar.
Wow.
And I mean, it's inevitable. Again,
is it going to be a situation like in the movies where they build the like the gun like is on like on their bodies and they take the piece and they put it together and then you've got a gun? Is it going to be like that?
No, it's not going to be a quick assemble.
Oh, is it from a tree that was struck by lightning?
Nope. There's not going to be any haunting or any.
Quick, Andy, now you do a film reference.
Are you going to sell it at a crossroads to a devil? That's not how the story goes. What the?
Yeah, you meet him to sell your guitar. Yeah. That's the famous crossroads story.
The devil's now on Facebook Marketplace.
Right. The famous story. But speaking of the economy and stuff, so lumber has gotten very expensive. Lumber. Oh. I know you guys are always following the lumber market. I know that you guys sit down every day with your multiple monitors in front of you and look at your lumber graphs. But it didn't occur to me because like Sitka spruce, which is a good tone wood, you know, is it's super expensive. That's what's like the soundboards and all the Martin guitars are made out of and stuff. And I learned this totally makes sense. It's just something I never thought about. And this might just be complete dead air waste of time. But it's like colder climate lumber is much more expensive because the trees grow so slowly. So the real cheap wood is like super humid environment just sprouts right up, right? But the stuff that's almost like Arctic Circle, like 1 millimeter a year, is obviously very expensive. Right. It has a tighter grain because of that.
Okay.
Anyway, that's like one of those obvious things that also blew my mind.
That
you know
makes
what I mean?
Sense. Is there now a problem with climate change where because the world is heating up, there is a smaller amount of cold climate wood?
I mean, if you believe in that kind of stuff,
right? Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know, yeah, no, it's affecting all the lumber market is insane. That's my point. So if any of you you guys know about my recent mustache, it's probably what
we've heard. Yes.
Word has reached LA. Yeah.
Probably what caused the breakup. No, I was having to go to Home Depot so much, I decided to grow a mustache because I felt out of place. And so any regular Home Depot goers will know that the lumber prices, they're out of hand. And that's all I got on it.
Or as the kids would incorrectly say, out of pocket for some dumb reason.
It's not some dumb reason.
It's Rob Dyrdek. He got everyone thinking that doesn't mean you paid for it yourself. Yep. It means out of control.
Yep, not some dumb reason.
Yeah.
It's good to know that, like, now I know why the custom writing desk I wanted to assemble is more expensive.
Are you being serious? Are you making fun of me, which is okay, or is that something you wanted to do?
I'm making fun, not of you, but of the fact that we're all going to die. I think that's kind of more where my angle.
Sure. Sure.
Just another symptom of how we're destroying the earth, and soon it's all going to be like Mad Max, and I'm not prepared for that.
Me neither. But I wasn't going to deep dive. I was just, that's cool if you wanted to build a writing desk. As, you know, I was like, that's exciting.
For some reason, that was the first place my mind went to with expensive wood. There's someone out there going, I've got to do oak.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once you build that, you got to use a quill pen, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That was in my vision. Quill pen.
That's up on the secret board. Yeah.
But that's also a problem because a lot of the good quill birds have died thanks to climate change.
Thanks, Obama.
Actually, this is a kind of a tangent, but if it's believed that dinosaurs have feathers, does this mean that theoretically at some point there could have been a dinosaur quill pen?
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I just saw some dumb meme about when that asteroid hit and killed the dinosaurs. It was killing like a million birds with one stone.
All right. I mean, you
I
know,
it seems good. I just saw it. I just reporting what I saw. I didn't, doesn't have to yeah. be. I can just talk about things I saw without saying they're funny.
Yeah, and that's
you can
the,
just talk about things.
And that's the only celestial news we have. Bye, everyone.
That's the science for today.
That's it.
Yeah, that's our show. So join us.
No, did you guys check out any of the eclipse? You get into it?
I saw. I didn't travel, but I went down to the. I traveled a couple of miles to the California Science Center where they were handing out glasses. Oh. Sorry, what about you, Josh? Did you see?
Here's the thing. I posted a video about how much I don't care about it on Instagram, and I've mm-hmm. gotten more internet hate from this video than anything I've ever posted before.
Really?
Oh, my God. I've been attacked.
Because you regularly use slurs and stuff. That's
I know.
Surprising.
I know.
Yeah.
All the other hatred does pass by the internet. But
yeah, shocking.
I've been attacked. There was one comment that somebody got that got 1,000 likes where they accused me of not having any sense of whimsy.
No, burn him. He's got no whimsy.
He's got no whimsy.
It took a couple. Finally, it took a couple of days. One person said, "Oh, well, he's Jewish, so he cares more about money than the eclipse." Which,
wow,
you know, I was waiting for that one. Finally, that came down. It
those
took
two,
a while.
Those two famously separate things. You're not allowed to. you can't
it's
care about
mutually
money.
Exclusive, isn't it?
Yep, you can't care about money and be into the eclipse. You can't do it. That's.
Yeah, that's often a complaint in relationships. Well, like, oh God, he cares more about eclipses than money. You know, yep. I don't mind his whimsy, but we're underwater here. We really can't.
I love a new stereotype that doesn't make sense. You know those Jews, they hate eclipses. you know, you heard? So
gets in the way of our money making.
Oh man.
If you held a quarter at arm's length, would that be about the right? Could you put that in front of the sun?
It was cloudy here and
were you in
2017? I was right there in it.
Was that a partial or a total eclipse?
That was a total. Yeah, and it was cool. It was cool. But you know, I'm whimsical, you know? I'm a whimsical guy.
I just found some pictures from the 1999 one in England, where it hit Cornwall. Actually, it hit way significantly more than England. It went like, I think it was, according to my physics teacher at the time, shout out to Nigel Blight. Hey, Nigel. I also just realized that Jesse thinks all English people are called Nigel, and he's not wrong. But
it's kind of true. It's,
but he
it's
pointed
a bit
out
on the
that,
nose.
That, I remember him like talking before, like he was pointing out that eclipse will be seen by more people on Earth than any previous eclipse. Firstly, because of population increase, but also it crossed a large chunk of Europe and a large chunk of Asia. It like went through, like it went through Munich, it went through like India and Pakistan, like it went through. It was seen by loads of people, but it crossed Cornwall and Devon, and we went on a school. I'd already left school, but like it was like a bunch of people from my school and then a few recently graduated school kids.
Now, as Josh would tell you, when the eclipse went over Israel, no one cared. They didn't even look up. No one saw it. They couldn't give a fuck. They hate eclipses.
By the way, the comments are still coming in. Are we allowed to curse on this podcast?
We
are.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
The most recent one was, "You're so fucking boring." That was it's like a hate filled fireball here going on the eclipse. And I have one quibble with something you just said, if I may.
Go
you
for
said
it.
when the eclipse hit, guys, it's not a natural disaster. it's a thing that the sun goes up, the sun comes down. We're used to it. There are eclipses. It happens. It's fine. So it's okay.
That is fair.
I think he meant it in the sense of like when the eclipse dropped, you know, like when it hit, when it came out, when the eclipse came out.
So it's, it's artistic. Okay, fine. Okay, got it.
Josh, before we get into stories, we already know what science you don't like, the science of eclipses, but we'd like to ask...
I never said I don't like the... I love the science of it. That's why I don't care about the eclipse, because I know from a scientific point of view, you know, it's not... I'm not living 4,000 years ago where I'm going, oh my God, does this mean God is angry with us? It's a thing. I know it's nothing. It's the moon. I get it. I know how shadows work. I want to get on with my day, and I'm getting older, and I don't like cold weather. And now that means it's another day of cold weather in Los Angeles after all this rain. That's all it is.
It didn't get significantly colder during that time. Like, I mean, it was a pretty hot day yesterday, but
I could feel it. Monday? It was 3 degrees. That's how sensitive yes. I'm from Colorado. I never want to go back because of the cold. I want heat. The older I get, the more I get Phoenix. That's...
it's like the Steely Dan of cities. Yeah.
You age into it. You age into Phoenix. Wow.
So what is... We'd like to ask our guests, what is your background in science? And that's ranged from things you liked or hated at school, to blowing stuff up in the woods with your friends, to stuff you follow nowadays, to whatever.
My background in science is, how could Captain Kirk and Cybok possibly have gotten to the center of the galaxy in Star Trek V when it's common knowledge that would have taken, given a warp capability of a 23rd century ship, at least 20 to 25 years to get there. What a tremendous issue with that movie I have. That's
well, now I feel like I'm on a first date.
And I just want to add, by the way, other than that, I love Star Trek V. In fact, I have this weird theory that if they had just fixed that little detail, I think the movie would have worked. And I think that's secretly why a lot of people don't like it, was because of that. And I know that's not true why they don't like it, but that's where my brain goes.
Is that an original cast one? That's
yes, it is.
That was the
Search for God one.
Okay.
That didn't help you, I could tell.
I don't think I saw anything after. I'm not even sure I saw The Voyage Home. I know it had whales. Maybe I saw it. I don't know.
Yeah, it had whales. Come on. Yeah. It had whales in a Klingon ship. It was great. It was great. And like Spock just like kills a guy on the bus.
I don't remember that. Okay, maybe I didn't see it.
Isn't that what the Vulcan death grip is? Just a guy who's like stereo's too loud, like with a mohawk, and he just Vulcan death grips him.
Oh, I thought even though it has death in the name, that it was like a sleeping grip.
Yeah, he didn't kill him. He put him to sleep. And in fact, that's canon, because in season 2 of Star Trek Picard, I feel like you're losing viewers with every word I speak.
No.
In season 2 of Star Trek Picard, the same actor who played the guy who got the Vulcan death grip in Star Trek 4 was back playing the same character, listening to loud music on a bus. And now it was 7 of 9. It was like, shut the fuck up. And he was like, all right, yeah, all right. Got it.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Little Easter egg for you.
There you go.
Wow.
Was he still punked up?
I think he was.
Was he still holding like a ghetto blaster?
I can't remember what he was holding, but I think the guy was, he was like, I think originally he was like, he worked on the crew or something, and they just put him in the movie, and then they put him in I'm trailing off. I didn't have a good ending for that. Fuck!
No, it's okay.
I'm just picturing Bill Paxton in the first scene of the first Terminator.
Yep, like an SNL sketch level wig.
Yeah.
Like that you know, you could see the rubber sort of creasing as it weighed itself over. It's like, how lucky that the Terminator in both films like approached people in kind of badass clothing first.
That are about his size. Right.
But I mean, like, he stumbles upon like a punk rock gang and then a biker bar, and that's where he materializes. You know, as opposed to like in a Kohl's, you know,
yeah,
or he like stumbles on
Disney,
a quinceañera, then he's just dressed like a mariachi right, guy for right, the rest of the movie, yeah.
And then in 2, he's just looks like he works at Subway,
right?
An apron and a cap,
yeah,
and the fact that he's
I need your apron and your visor.
And the fact that he's Arnold Schwarzenegger, and yet he meets somebody who has the exact same size clothing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I think he's not the tallest. I think he's like 6'1" or something. I don't think he was known for his height. So it's just about getting the shoulder measurement of the jacket size, right?
Well, listen, if you have a wrong shoulder measurement, that throws off everything. I mean,
yeah,
it really...
The taper is going to be wrong. Yeah, it's
exactly. And then, you know, you will not be taken seriously as a Terminator if the cut of the suit...
No, it is about the shoulder measurement. Old Andy never lived in a bell tower wood over there with his normal shoulders.
By the way, I've been looking this up while we've been chatting. Kirk Thatcher, who was the punk on the bus, was an associate producer on the film. He also started off work as a prop maker and sculptor on other Star Trek films, and he asked to play the role. He asked Leonard Nimoy if he could play the role because he had experience with punk fashion. And he also composed the song "I Hate You," which is what plays in the boombox. So there you go.
He did, like Josh said, recur.
He did reappear as Punk on the Bus in Star Trek Picard.
Wow.
I'm glad you were fact checking me.
I was fact embellishing. I was I didn't doubt you for a second, but I wanted some extra context.
Yeah, Josh, I don't know how to tell you this. You don't have a Lies About Star Trek vibe.
Yes! For the win! Can I have that? Can I put that on my website?
Absolutely.
Does not have a Lies About Star Trek vibe.
Yeah, get it on there. Gene Roddenberry science aside, were there any classes or anything as into biology, anything, did you ever get the bug particularly hated?
I think, when I was really young, I was always interested in the space program and astronauts and going into space and that kind of stuff. And then when I realized the danger, I thought, I'd rather pretend to be an astronaut on television and then go home to a mansion versus get blown up. But I was, there was the gifted and talented program thing, and we were studying the capsules and the Apollo missions and that kind of, the space travel I've always been interested in. The more I learn about it, the more I read about it, the more I find that it's probably the least effective way of actually getting anywhere. Unfortunately.
Well, it depends where you're talking about getting, but yeah, I'd say it's the most effective way to get to space. But
Say if you're going to the moon, it's the safest way to travel.
Right.
As opposed to trying your car or something.
True. I'm fascinated with, you know, we want to get to Alpha Centauri and we want to do it in a manner in which we can do it within our lifetimes. You know, is that even theoretically achievable? And so I like reading about how, I think the latest idea is the Alcubierre drive, where the idea of you get a spacecraft that can bend space time in front of it and behind it, and so it never moves, but it moves space time. But the problem with that is it takes an enormous amount of energy to achieve that. Is it something else? Is it more like Stargate, where it's something to do with opening a portal from one place to another place? Like, all that stuff fascinates me.
Like a weird alien Egypt planet.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Sure.
I'd rather it be the ship. That's cooler. I don't want to throw shade against Stargate, but there is something cool about a giant fuck off Starship Enterprise that makes fudge whenever you want it versus walking through a door.
A door. I mean, but a door is the most practical.
I know. Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's probably the better way to do it, but still, it's more Holiday Inn in space. I mean, there's something appealing to that.
And they said this guy had no whimsy. I present to you.
Strikes me, yeah.
Exhibit A.
Exhibit A on the whimsy.
This is the first time I've begun to doubt internet commenters. Like, maybe they're cracked up to me.
So it's interesting that you bring up like going to Alpha Centauri, but doing it in our lifetime, because I think that is why I somewhat call bullshit on three body problem. in that if we found out something was happening in 400 years, would anyone care at all?
Reverse spoiler alert if you haven't gotten through the first three episodes, but yeah, I continue.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, you're right. I thought it was an episode one thing. I don't know.
Oh, was it actually? Maybe. Okay. Well, I don't know how far into the first book Matt is.
Okay, well, never mind. I've ruined everything.
We've already said it. No. You're saying like a 400-year problem. Yeah, my thing was just like, I don't know how much humans would really get super immediately worried about a 400-year from now problem.
But, no, because we have a lot of those and we're not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I don't, we'll tend to just assume, oh, that'll work out. I mean.
But a lot of the book is, one of the more interesting things about it, reading all three of them, is just how Chinese they are. Like, and I mean that in, yes, painting with broad strokes, but just like how
they love an eclipse.
Well, it's more about just like how written and about a society that is much more collectivist
and much more long-term, like long-term thinks about
right. When they're describing the way that the public at large react to all this new information, I'm like, that's not what would happen. I'm just thinking, not what would happen in America, but maybe it would, maybe the Chinese, the collective psyche is different there. But yeah, that was a lot of my biggest gripes with the book. I'm like, what? Everyone just formed these groups immediately based on. It was just, it was almost like Star Trekian, even though it was pessimistic, but Star Trekian in terms of like,
that makes
humans
sense,
will all get together and do all these things. I'm like, no, I think it'll just kind of be chaos and denial and like all the shit that we saw during COVID that we wouldn't have predicted people would do when presented with.
But even that was an immediate thing. I mean, if you just think about if you compare it to global warming or something, it's no one.
Yeah.
I mean, people care, but it's like this. It's a 400-year issue. And you're mm-hmm. totally right. I mean, I only saw the show, which is mainly set in London. And I'm just like, no way.
Yeah, the whole book, is Chinese characters.
Right.
It's so funny. Like the main character of book one is one Chinese dude who was turned into five multi-ethnic people, and I'm like, this book series is already like 1500 to 2000 pages between all three, and with way too many characters to keep track of, and you're going to turn one character into five in this show. Like, this is going to be untenable by book three. There are so many characters.
It sounds like more than a three-body problem.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what else is a space problem? Just to get off discussing a book that only half of us have read?
Yep, sorry. So it's my fault completely.
The Wikipedia. I'm familiar enough. Yeah. That's how I've gotten through
life. It's my fault. I don't know the order of the things happening in the book. I thought that it was revealed on episode. I'm very anti-spoiler, so I'm very disappointed with myself if I...
That's the most minor of spoilers for all three books, I think. So,
But did it turn out that the three-body problem was his father?
No, it was the friends we made along the way.
Okay. Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
One of those. All right.
Are any of the problems peanut allergies?
No. Why do you say that, Matt?
Because a bunch of school kids have discovered a potential issue with EpiPens in space.
Ooh.
This is a story that Justin Broad sent in from futurism.com. A group of gifted elementary school students has discovered that EpiPens, life-saving devices that inject epinephrine in the case of severe allergic reaction, can turn poisonous after being launched into space. There's more evidence of the harrowing effects space radiation can have on the health of astronauts. The students helped researchers at the University of Ottawa investigate whether the devices can be safely used in space by astronauts. But there is some bad news. Just relatively small amounts of space radiation cause the epinephrine. That's what we would call adrenaline, right? Is there a difference?
I think there's a difference. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
There is no difference, or is it just two ends of the same thing?
I think those are two different things.
Those are two different things, yeah. It's not an aluminum thing. I think epinephrine... Well, then the photo...
Nope.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
I just Googled it. Epinephrine, also known as adrenaline, is both a neurotransmitter and a hormone, according to the Cleveland Clinic's website.
Wow. I learned this today.
Me too, just now.
And
wow.
You say epinephrine, I say adrenaline.
Wow.
That didn't help this.
Let's call the whole thing toxic in space, according to this story.
Did they send elementary school kids into space?
Yeah, they with hindsight, that was the first mistake. But they did get some good science done before they panicked and, you know, they let's not talk about the final result.
This was a Kate Capshaw movie in the 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah. Wait, was she in Space Camp, the movie?
Yes, she was.
So was Doug Benson in a small role.
No, really?
What?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like a, you know, extra almost. I don't think he had a speaking part, but I think he was like a part of the ground crew or something. He was in Space Camp.
Wow.
Anyway.
That was an example of, we're going to make this movie about the space shuttle, and then right before they released it, the space shuttle blew up.
Oh, I forgot that was the order of it.
Yes.
Who else was in Space Camp, that, like, any of the child actors that went on to do big things?
Well, Lauren Hawley, who was in Picket Fences. Yeah. Jesus Christ, maybe. Why? I shouldn't know this.
No, I'm trying to figure out, because it's a great potential Spats entry. It's great. It's
Kelly Preston. Isn't that Travolta's wife? Kelly Preston? No?
I think she was, yes. I think she passed away.
Oh.
Well, I don't know why I hushed, like, don't bring it up in front of John Travolta, who's on the podcast.
Oh, Leah Thompson. Wait, Joaquin Phoenix was in Space Camp?
What? He was?
Yeah.
Oh, was he one of the... Oh, I guess he was one of the kids?
Yeah, he was Max. Tate Donovan. Actually, Tom Skerritt. Jesus, Terry O'Quinn from Lost.
Okay, Tom Skerritt, if he's been on a train, is an easy Spats, the easiest Spats in the world, but... I'm trying to picture Joaquin on a train. Josh, you don't know what's going on. We do this thing.
We got a Spats update before we get back to
the story. Jesse's theory that actors can be categorized like it's the new EGOT.
It's new EGOT. Whether they have, but it's... Go ahead.
Yeah, it's whether they have been on, is it a spaceship, a plane, an automobile, a train, and a ship in their movies. I don't know if we read out, Rachel Carter sent in a claim for Robin Williams. I don't know if we speak to bring
No,
this
I don't.
Circle.
I don't recall us doing that, but that's a great call.
It's a solid call. So her argument is spaceship, Mork and Mindy, that's a spaceship.
That counts.
Okay. Plane, right. He's on a plane in Hook.
Right.
And a ship in Hook.
And a ship in Hook, but she also points out in a ship, as in Aladdin, he becomes a submarine. A submarine being a type of ship, so he actually is a ship, which I think is a solid extra level of Spats. Then automobile, the angriest man in Brooklyn is a case for that. I'm sure he's been in other cars in other films.
Horse and Night at the Museum. So he might get the Spats.
Yeah, the Spats. but also for train. Okay, this is. I feel like he's been on another train as well in other films, but she's putting in a case for, in Mrs. Doubtfire, he was on a cable car, and Rachel says, what is a cable car if not a train with an extra hook up to the cable? Mm. I'm arguing that a thing that runs on tracks is what a train means here. Oh, it's tenuous. I don't know how we feel
about
this.
That is tenuous, but I mean, surely in Bicentennial Man, he was on some weird stuff.
Was he, what about that movie Toys? He had to be on weird shit on that one.
Yeah, I mean, he was in Flubber.
Robin Williams on a train. When you give this to someone with obsessive compulsive disorder, now
yeah.
I can't.
Also, shout out to your 1989 banking keyboard.
I know. I love the sound it makes. Money with every keystroke.
Yeah.
He just hacked into the mainframe, didn't he?
Yeah. I like that I'm buying a plane ticket in 1993. This is great.
That actually is like the artificial typing sound that AI phone systems now have to pretend like, oh, I'll just check that for you. Tap, 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 tap.
Yes, it's the Hermes E1C keyboard.
So the cable car, firstly, he was in Mrs. Doubtfire.
Are you being serious about that?
It's a San Francisco one, but it's like it's a trolley car. It looks like a train. I'm accepting this, but also in Good Will Hunt. I'm fully accepting this picture. This is it's a trolley car. It's a San Francisco trolley car. That looks like a train.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd feel better I'd feel better with a better train example. Like. I understand that you're allowing it, but
I'll put the picture in the show notes here so you can have a look at what we're dealing with here. But that looks like Robin Williams as Mrs. Doubtfire hanging off a train.
Yeah.
When you say cable car, I was first thinking like one of those like, you know, like skiing gondola kind of deal.
Yeah, like a hanging thing. But no, a San Francisco trolley.
It's a tram. It's a tram.
Will count as a train. So this keyboard you have, I just Googled this, the Hermes.
Yes.
Did you say E3?
E1C.
An E1C. Okay, yeah. So that's just what it's called. The brand name is not Hermes. The brand name is Gamdias. Okay. I was wondering if it was related to the typewriter company.
Oh, okay.
Because that would make sense, but it's not.
No, it's a gaming computer that has lights on it. During the pandemic, I got more into gaming. Not that I'm good at it, but I thought, oh, I'll get a gaming computer. And
what's your go-to? What are you doing?
Star Trek Online. You don't need a gaming computer for Star Trek Online. You barely need a Tandy computer from the 80s for Star Trek Online. But
okay,
yes, that's that one. And I checked the Arkham Knight or Arkham City Batman.
All right. To the listeners, I'm still giving StarCraft 2 a go. If anybody's on board, man, the new patch has me pretty fucked up with the Widowmine nerf. Otherwise, you know, if you want to play. And I'm still over on chess.com, hot local singles on chess.com. I'm serious. That's so people don't talk to me. But you guys, I've played with a few of you guys, and it's fun.
StarCraft is the three species, right?
Yep.
The humans, the butternut, and the da-da-da, right?
Yeah, it's the Terra and the Zerg and the Protoss, the humans. Oh, my God. Oh, nerd. Anyway.
Speaking of nerds in space, EpiPens.
Yep. EpiPens.
Oh, right.
Yeah, remember that story from a year ago?
Sorry.
So, small amounts of space radiation, just small, relatively small amounts, can cause the epinephrine to break down, turning it into a health hazard instead of a lifesaver. They had samples launched into space as part of NASA's Cubes in Space program. So the University of Ottawa's Faculty of Science then analyzed the return samples and found that the epinephrine was only 87% pure due to cosmic radiation. The remaining 13% turned into benzoic acid derivatives, which are extremely poisonous.
Jeez.
How did the kids help? I'm confused.
Were the ones who ran this experiment. I guess the cubes in space. So I guess they had like a bunch of CubeSats that were launched, and the deal was that various citizen scientists could propose experiments that can be launched on them. And one of them, these kids went, let's send some adrenaline up in space and see what happens.
I don't think they did shit on this.
What's that?
You think this is one of those things where the teacher kind of just nudged this along?
Sure. Like an 8-year-old in between picking his nose is gonna. You know, I have some concerns about the EpiPen. Actually, I would have been that 8-year-old. I take that back. I would have been. Now that I think of it, excuse me, Miss Crandall. I've got some worries. I feel like it was probably a day where they, you know, put one thing in another thing and then they shipped it. That would be my guess. Why am I shitting on elementary school kids?
You've got no whimsy.
There we go.
No whimsy. Wow. So this is the students from St. Brother Andre Elementary School's Program for Gifted Learners. And as part of the Cubes in Space program, two cubes were put together by the students, with one going on a rocket and the other on a high-altitude balloon. Said University of Ottawa chemistry professor Paul Mayer. Okay.
So they put the cube together. That was their contribution.
Yeah, it says here, in fact, no epinephrine was found in the after EpiPen solution samples.
Oof.
Yeah.
So that means if, let's say, the characters from Pulp Fiction were in space.
Okay.
There was an overdose and he tried to give her the adrenaline.
Mia Wallace is a goner in space. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. So there's no way you could remake Pulp Fiction in space.
No, you're not doing Pulp Fiction in space.
Unless the ship had some kind of radiation shield and that was established early on in the narrative.
Well, that's what they're saying here. It says, fortunately, not all is lost. There may be a way to package EpiPen solutions in a way that doesn't expose them to cosmic radiation. An invention that could save an astronaut's life in the future.
How
good to know.
Here's Mike. All right, so how long of exposure before it becomes poisonous, do they say? Like, is it instant or is it, you know, overnight? Like, is it like mayonnaise? How?
I guess after midnight, if it gets wet or gets exposed to bright light.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Something like that.
That feels right. That feels right.
I think Matt's quit the show.
Yeah. I was looking at some story. Okay, I was looking at some other stories that some listeners sent in, but then the sciencealert.com sidebar led me to this story, and I'm amazed none of our listeners have sent in this story, or maybe they have, and I haven't seen it yet, in which case I apologize, and thank you for sending it in. But scientists accidentally made a mouse grow legs in place of genitals. Now...
Oh.
Mm.
No. One or two
turning
legs.
Off, two legs. Turning off a gene early in mouse development led researchers to end up with an accidental six-legged embryonic mammal. This strange result took the spinal cord researcher, developmental biologists Anastasia Lavoska and Moses Malo and their colleagues at Portugal's Gulbenkian Science Institute in a new direction. Malo said, "I didn't choose the project chose me."
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what I always say when I'm caught with genital-free mouse monsters.
Okay, guys, I think there's a buddy cop movie in this, okay? And you've got, like, this super huge mouse, and there's going to be a scene where the bad guy kicks him in what he thinks are the nuts, and the mouse is like, "Guess again!" And then he kicks him back.
The fly unzips itself. Yeah, yeah. And then fists.
Yeah, yeah, fists come out. Yeah. Fist for a dick coming in 2005.
Dick fist. Is that a Tool song or is that a song?
Right. Dick fist.
It's Richard Fist. It's a German last name, yeah. And I thank you for not walking.
Yeah. When all the other rats in the force went crooked, only Dick Fist could. So the project chose her.
He's not afraid of glancing down and seeing his friend make a little O with his fingers.
And then there's a sequel where he has the opportunity to get actual genitalia, but then he faces a quandary. What will I be then?
Right. His whole identity was having a fist for a dick, you know? And he's got all these... Now he has a huge watch collection, and he doesn't know what to do with himself.
The team compared 10 to 17-day-old mouse embryos with and without the functioning versions of the gene in question. The gene in question, if anyone's wanting to try this at home, is TGFBR1.
Ah, yes, TGFBR1.
Which codes for the TGFBR1 receptor protein. It contributes to a signaling pathway that gives the forming body its trunk-to-tail directions. The pathway provides a create a limb here or external genitals instruction to the developing embryo cells. As a mammalian embryo grows, it builds structures sequentially from head to tail. Early in development, genetic mechanisms shift from focusing on the head to extending the body and laying the foundations for the major organ systems. Later, a second transition occurs when the activation of genes in multiple layers of tissue extends the trunk to create a tail. And it is during this process, people trying this at home, that interactions between newly emerging tissues generate structures necessary for the body's exit channels and genitalia. Hmm. While legs and arms share many of the same genes, this early in the process, the hind limbs and genitals have more in common. There's been some suggestion they arise from the same initial primordium structure in ancestral species. Okay, so this could be, like, also interesting information on... Like the evolution of the junk.
Well,
how did the wang arise?
There have been times where a woman has said to me, "Oh, I'm sorry, I thought that was your leg."
And you're like, "Oh, well, sorry, I'll get that off you."
Yes. And then her follow up question is, "Why are your legs so short?"
Yeah. And oftentimes, is that another arm in your pocket, or are you just happy to?
Yeah. Why did you put like a little shoe on the end of your penis? Like, was...
what I think is fascinating.
Have you been responding to those the saddest story in the world adverts?
Yes, yes. Penis shoes never used.
It will. So, Lavoska and colleagues says wonder it will therefore be interesting to determine whether a mechanism related to the developmental plasticity uncovered by our work could help explain the absence of hind limbs in snakes, but the presence in most lizards.
I think somewhere on the other side of the planet from this lab, there's another lonely mouse with all dicks.
Yeah, just walking on
walking on dicks.
Yeah.
And
like, oops, all dicks.
Yep. Oops, all dicks. Yeah. Captain Crunch's oops, all dicks. Oops, all dicks would be the funniest cereal.
Are they colorful in the cereal?
They're okay. Colorful. Okay. They're colorful. Okay. It's Captain Crunch. Oops, all dicks.
It's blue and red dicks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Berry flavored?
Will never be court-martialed by the Navy, even after the berries debacle. Oops, all dicks may send them over the edge.
Now, is it oops, all dicks, or is it oops, comma, all dicks?
Oops, exclamation point, all dicks, I think, right?
I think.
Let me see what oops, all berries actually is.
Yep.
Do you think Captain Crunch genuinely made a mistake, or do you think it was intentional and then they tried to cover it up with some...
It is a classic government cover-up type thing.
Like, he knew what he was doing.
The look on his face is not one of contrition. Like, I feel like this is going to happen again when I see
that. Me too.
Smile.
No, he seems extremely... I would love to get an... it'd be funny if Captain Crunch just had an empty box and it was oops, all milk.
Maybe he went rogue. Maybe he did it. And
right. Sort of a sort of a Hunt for Red October type thing. Like he's kind of trying to.
Do you mean to tell me that the Russians lost another box of cereal?
Yes, I am very Russian. Why do you ask?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Sean Connery, I was asking ChatGPT to give me some more spatzes, and
oh
yes, right,
did we have Sean Connery on our list already?
I don't think so.
Well, no. check ChatGPT's math, because it can hallucinate. Spaceship Zed in Zardoz.
Yep.
Planes, James Bond in Goldfinger, among other Bond films. Automobiles, James Bond in various movies. Trains, James Bond in From Russia with Love. Agamemnon in Time Bandits. And ship's first officer in the Hunt for Red October.
Don't forget the great train robbery as a train.
Oh, I never saw that. That is Connery?
I think so. Oh. And Michael Crichton wrote and directed it too.
And directed, oh.
Yeah,
interesting.
I think.
So throw that on the pile. Yeah. Then there's some other tenuous ones when I kept being like, more, give me more, more. Like it gives Matt Damon, but the ship is interstellar features spacecraft. But if we're looking for sea ships, this might be a stretch, unless considering his producer role in Manchester by the Sea, which involves fishing boats. Like,
nah, we're not counting it. No.
Matt Damon's never been in a boat.
Well, I don't know. It's just ChatGPT. It's obviously fallible, but it's given ones we already have. You know, it's giving the first ones were Harrison Ford, Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, DiCaprio, Samuel L. Jackson. Did we have that one?
Wasn't Matt Damon in a boat? Didn't they in the Bourne Identity? He was floating at sea, and they found him.
Oh, maybe. Also, wasn't Talented Mr. Ripley, weren't they living a life of luxury on boats?
Yeah, he killed the guy on the boat.
Okay, then I think throw Damon.
Damon gets it.
Yeah, ChatGPT.
Yeah, he does. Damon gets it.
What about Denzel?
Denzel, actually, ChatGPT also listed him. Oh, no, it says no spaceships, according to ChatGPT.
Yeah, so we've brought this up before. Has Denzel been to space? He's done everything else. In fact, he starred in movies just about all the other vehicles. Like, it's his main job. It's like, you know, he's an airline pilot, or he's kidnapping a train or something.
I think no space. Johnny Depp and Denzel Washington are both Pats looking for an S.
Aren't we all?
Yep.
Wow. I guess he's never been to space.
Wait, Johnny Depp's never been?
Again, this is according to I'll have to back this. ChatGPT's first instinct was to say that Depp has, while not traditionally in space films, his roles often have a fantastical element that might metaphorically align with spacecraft, e.g. Alice in Wonderland. Like, no, ChatGPT, that's not enough.
Well, wasn't he the astronaut in The Astronaut's Wife?
I didn't actually see that.
I think you're right, but I don't know if it showed him. Does it show him in space? Sure,
yes,
for one little.
He was the astronaut in The Astronaut's Wife.
You can't to have been in space. You know, you have to.
I've never seen The Astronaut's Wife, but I'm looking at the Wikipedia description of it, and in the plot, it starts off saying Spencer Armacost, which is Johnny Depp's character, is an astronaut working for NASA, and his wife Gillian is a second grade teacher. While he and Alex Streck are walking in space on a mission, an explosion knocks out their communication with the command center. So the very first paragraph of the plot description of this, Johnny Depp's in space.
All right.
He's for sure in space. That definitely counts.
You know
counts.
What the first animal in space was?
Was it Laika the dog?
Is this going to be a joke or a twist?
No, it was Laika the dog. You know what else is going on with dogs, you guys?
What's that?
Dogs do understand us, says a new study.
Oh,
yeah, this story was tweeted at us by Ed C. Hey,
yes.
Ed.
Or Ed's dog.
Right? We don't
know.
He gets it.
Whether dogs truly understand the words we say, as opposed to things like tone and context clues, is a question that has long perplexed owners, and so far science has not been able to deliver clear answers. But a new brainwave study published on March 22nd in Current Biology suggests that hearing the names of their favorite toys actually activates dogs' memories of those objects.
Hmm.
It definitely shows us that it's not human unique to have this type of referential understanding. First author Lila Magyari of the Eötvös Loránd University in Hungary told AFP, explaining that researchers have been skeptical up to this point. With a couple of famous exceptions, dogs have fared poorly on lab tests requiring them to fetch objects after hearing their names, and many experts have argued that it's not so much what we say, but rather how and when we say things that pique our pooch's interest. Yelling, "Go get the stick," and having a dog successfully bring the object back does not conclusively prove that they know what the word stick means, for example.
Right.
So even scientists who concede that dogs do pay attention to our speech have said that rather than really understanding what words stand for, they're reacting to particular sounds with learned behavior. So in this new paper, Associate Professor Magyari and colleagues applied a non-invasive brain imaging technique to 18 dogs brought to their lab in Budapest. The test involves taping electrodes to the dogs' heads to monitor their brain activity. Their owners said words for toys they were most familiar with. For example, "Kun-kun, look, the ball." And then showed them either the matching object or a mismatched object. After analyzing the recordings, the team found different brain patterns when dogs were shown matching versus mismatched objects. This experimental setup has been used for decades in humans, including babies, and is advised as evidence of semantic processing or understanding of meaning.
Ooh.
The test also had the benefit of not requiring the dogs to fetch something in order to prove their knowledge. We found the effect in 14 dogs, co-first author Mariana Boros told AFP, proving that the ability is not confined to a few exceptional dogs. Even the four that failed may have simply been tested in the wrong words, she added. Miss Holly Root Gutteridge, a dog behavior scientist at the University of Lincoln in England, told AFP that the ability to fetch specific toys by name had previously been deemed a genius quality. Famous border collies Chaser and Rico could find and retrieve specific toys from large piles, but were deemed outliers, she said. The new study shows that a whole range of previously considered dumb-as-fuck dogs are learning the names of the objects in terms of brain responses, even if they did not demonstrate it behaviorally.
So does that indicate, then, that there are some dogs that are like, yeah, I know what it is, I'm just not going to go get it. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I mean, I know that for a long time, people thought cats were much more dumb, but it's just than they are. But that's just because of their indifference to wanting to please you. So it's very hard to get those results.
See, that warms my heart. I don't know. I love that. I wish I could be more like that in life. Just hear what you say and just stare at you with a blank face and then
right, like they're, yeah. I mean, not super complex things, but pretty equitable to dogs. They have a totally different. They don't need to please you for, they don't need you for their survival. I mean, they do, because you might have them in your home and the door's locked, but like, that's just not their evolution.
Just by the way, like you might have noticed that I haven't been doing much comprehension in the last couple of minutes. That's because I got a little bit distracted down a spats tunnel. I need a ruling, Jesse, on Denzel Washington in the movie Deja Vu wasn't on a spacecraft per se, but he was sent back in time through a time machine. Where does that... Now, like, according to Einstein, like, space and time are...
I know space equals time. I totally get it. But it would have to be...
I mean, they are different dimensions, but it has to be something that leaves the Earth's orbit and travels around. Is it?
I think you need to add that to the spats. Like, time travel needs to be a separate thing.
Because it would have to be vehicular. Like, for instance, if you're doing like the time machine where you just sit there in a steampunk thing, doesn't fucking count. But if you're doing, if you're in a DeLorean, it can count. Okay, you know what we're looking for is the locomotion for it to be a vehicle.
And I don't know necessarily. Yeah, I don't know what the physical nature of this time machine is.
Right, but yeah, was it a time cop situation? That movie, by the way, I'm struggling with that one a little bit.
Struggling
because when they go back in time, he's in like this capsule that they launch, but then when he comes out the other end in the past, there's no capsule. But then when he comes back into the present, he's back in the capsule again. Explain this to me. Probably science people.
Oh, I don't think I saw it since it was in theaters. I'd forgotten the details of this.
Yeah. I mean, that's just one of those movies that was just written by like a sentient bag of cocaine. So it was in that era of screenwriting, you know? So I don't think they really thought about it. You know, much like Predator or something where it's just written by Coke and then it's awesome.
By the way, this... Good chance to plug a new podcast that our friends Jordan Morris and Emily Fleming are doing called Free With Ads, where they watch and discuss the various offerings that the internet lets you watch for free if you're willing to put up with ads. And the first episode was Time Cop. Very fun podcast. I'll drop the link in the show notes here.
Oh, yeah. Two good friends of the show. Check that out. Speaking of which, we should wrap up the main episode of our show right now. We'll save an extra story for our Patreon patrons, but... Joshua Snyder, where can our listeners find you and everything you're doing and maybe critique your claims on Instagram?
Sure. You're welcome to follow me at NerdyVirgin on all the handles. And you can join in the hate with everyone else on Instagram. Please tell me how terrible I am for not giving a shit about the eclipse.
It's funny to me how many people guessed your handle. You know what I mean? They just sort of knew. It's interesting.
I will say a total eclipse, which I've witnessed. What that is, like once the main bit of the sun is invisible and you can see the stuff that you normally can't see around the outside of the sun, because normally there is huge amounts of light that is preventing you from seeing this significantly dimmer stuff. Like that is pretty amazing. I will agree with you that when you're just looking through a very dark piece of plastic at just the outline of a orange circle with a chunk taken out of it, it doesn't look quite as impressive.
But it's fun to do the pinhole kind of stuff. That's what
it is fun. Oh, yeah. You took a great picture of...
But you guys are famously
You look
whimsical.
At the shadows on the ground, you see like the gaps between leaves are basically like 100 pinhole cameras, and you see...
Little crescents.
These weird crescent shadows that look very cool.
I feel like I'm being bombarded with whimsy right now.
It's not whimsy. It's just it's different. It's not. It's just the fact that it's rare. It doesn't have to be whimsy. It's just it's something different. I don't know. It's like suddenly it did when I went outside here in the desert when it started to get eclipsed. I don't think this is just in my head that dogs started to bark. I mean, dogs were barking, but I was like, I think that just increased. I think there is.
See,
dogs are getting a little weirded out.
You with the whole, Josh, with the whole nerdy virgin thing, you're just afraid you'll be sacrificed during an eclipse, which I think I think leads to your secret disdain, you know?
It could be, yeah. I'm not sure what kind of dragon would want me, but...
There was a... it's very funny that when it went over Memphis, Tennessee, here, you know, home of Elvis, right? There was a photo that... went pretty viral of the eclipse, and it's of the eclipse happening over a pyramid, And it was like this big, you know, AP press photo thing. And it's like, oh my God, how majestic is this? So ancient and wonderful. And a lot of people, if you look closely, you'll see like antennas and stuff on the pyramid. And what people don't realize is that's just the giant Bass Pro Shops in Memphis. it's in a giant pyramid that they built downtown, and it's a Bass Pro Shops. And it's just the most American photo. I love it.
I always forget that Memphis is named for an Egyptian city just because the town sounds so American, like Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Memphis, Tennessee.
Right.
Yep. Jewel of the Mississippi. Memphis. Yeah.
Oh, man. That is.
No, yeah, Tennessee.
It's been a long time since I've fished for bass.
Mm. Yeah. Well, especially since you were on the pro circuit.
Yeah, I know. And the river runs through it. That was all me.
Yeah,
those the biopic.
My story,
the Joshua Snyder story, starring Brad Pitt. Yeah,
hey, Brad Pitt has to be a spat, right?
Let me go back to this thread and see.
Brad Pitt has to be a spat.
Is Brad Pitt?
I know
spats.
Mark Wahlberg is.
Brad Pitt at Astra. That's his space. I feel like we've done Brad Pitt before in this show because I feel like Ad Astra was a memory.
And then the most recent movie, he was on a train fighting people with martial arts stuff, right? So there's the train, and then he's been in car.
It's just about the ship. Let's see.
The ship is the hard one. The spaceship is always going to be the hard one.
Okay, wait. Well, he was Troy, in the spaceship. Possibly Troy. Did you guys see Troy?
I saw Troy.
I can't remember if he was on the boat though.
He was in a movie called By the Sea. Was that? Did he go? Was he in a boat?
He's
on that?
Been on boats.
Yeah, there we go. Vanessa and Roland. Roland, that's Brad Pitt, and Vanessa is Angelina Jolie. Go sailing with Lee and Michelle. So yeah, there's a boat. There's a boat already done.
Excellent,
excellent.
And another I think spats. He was on a boat in Benjamin Button as well.
Oh, I bet we have.
Yep, he's on a tugboat. He works on a tugboat in Benjamin Button.
Yep. There you go.
Have we determined? Do we know for sure if we have listeners who are active Wikipedia editors?
I'm sure we do. Why are you trying to get your Wikipedia?
No, I just think someone should. I don't think it would get taken down if someone created a Spats Wikipedia page and then an active list of provably Spatsed actors.
Well, I think Jesse needs to start the Spats podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, I would if I could interview them, the people. Mm. I could just discuss Spats. But, like, you know, yeah, I mean, if I could get everyone that's had a Spats and you know. Of course I would do that, but how are you going to do that? You know.
How about if we have 2 months until 229 and beyond, June 7th and 8th in 29 Palms, California. Go to 229andbeyond.com. What if we got some Spats merch by then? Is that, you think that's worth doing?
Oh,
I don't know.
Wow.
We got 2 months.
That's aggressive.
I feel like I would wear a Spats shirt that just said Spats and had the different vessels and no other explanation.
Yeah.
Just Spats.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Point,
I don't
like
think it'd
airplane.
Be some big, don't make a big thing out of it. It's the type of merch where if you ever saw anyone else in it, you'd immediately be best friends.
Right. Mm.
You know? yeah.
Just an idea. I'm not forcing us by saying it. It doesn't have to happen.
Oh, we also, I know we also got an email that, again, Jesse, we need to get you on the Probably Science email, the Probably Science Gmail there. Because I know that Emily Brown, listener and patron, wrote in asking about the ribbons, if they are still available.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They're still available. And
all right. Well, we need to connect you with Emily then so that she
can
get...
Yeah, please do that. Yes, Emily.
She wants a magnet shirt, paperweight, bottle opener. She wants the lot, so...
She wants the lot. Well, I only have magnets. But, yeah, I'll send you one. Absolutely. Get one.
All right. Well,
have one.
We'll sort that out. But listen, we're going to wrap up the main show. Listeners, you can find us, as always, probablyscience.com, on Twitter, at probablyscience, individually, at Andy T. Wood, at Jesse Case, and at Matt Kirshen. And if you have any questions, comments, clarifications, stories you would like us to cover, you can email us, probablyscience@gmail.com. Check out Josh, super funny, highly recommend it. And listeners, we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.